stop the signal.
All right, everyone, welcome back to The Signal. We've got a really cool episode today. I brought in an IRL friend. Well, first online friend, then MeetSpace friend. I didn't even ask you, what do you want to go by on here?
Dan's fine.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Dan is here to talk about, well, we wanted to talk a little bit about decentralized media, I guess. Is that what this would decentralized communication?
Yeah, decentralized communication. I mean, it is social media technically.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So we were chatting about this probably, well, I think over at Jacob's place not too long ago, probably 6 months ago or so.
I think we first started talking during New Year's Eve.
Yeah. That's right. And so you have dipped your toes into something that I had wanted to dip my toes in, and I just signed up with your link, but I wanted to get my mind fully around this thing. There's a couple of protocols or software packages that are emerging to offer more private and more peer-to-peer communication or social media options. And the one that you're coming on to talk about today is Mastodon, which I just signed up for a second ago. But I think it looks like it looks a little bit like a, I don't want to say a Twitter clone in a bad way, but that looks like,
I think
the,
that's fair.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's the intent behind their user interface design. But there are, behind the scenes, it sounds like there is a lot more going on that facilitates censorship resistance and things like that. So do you want to give a little bit of background on what's going on behind the scenes? I know that it's federated in some fashion, and you can run your own server, but that's about all I know.
Yeah, so I'll start off by saying I've kind of pitched it to you as Mastodon this whole time, but it's not just Mastodon. There's probably more like 10 different software packages that speak the same protocol called ActivityPub. Okay. The first one that kind of popularized it is called Mastodon. That one has actually kind of lost favor recently in favor of one called Pleroma, Pleroma. I don't know why they picked a name that just sound, it doesn't roll off the tongue so well, but
sure doesn't.
Their goal with that, or at least one of the effects of it, is it can actually run on a Raspberry Pi. It's got very low system requirements.
Okay.
So it really helps with the decentralization thing, and that's actually so what I'm running.
So when you say it will run on the Raspberry Pi, what do you mean that a server can run on a Raspberry Pi, or do you mean that you can use an application that logs into someone else's server on a Raspberry Pi?
Right. No, the server will run on a Raspberry Pi.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So this is something that could easily coexist on something like Umbral or
Start9.
What is it? Start9, yeah. Yeah, so I guess I dodged your original question, which is kind of what's going on under the hood. So the way ActivityPub and Mastodon, Pleroma, all that work is you have just thousands, actually tens of thousands of these individual servers, which have several even thousands of user accounts on each of them. And these servers behind the scenes are connected to each other to share user data, to share posts, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To create what appears to the user to be one single social media platform, but it's in fact these tens of thousands of individual servers.
Huh. Okay. So they speak to each other in order to propagate, you know, the data and the posts, and in so doing form kind of, and I'm assuming this is somewhat like the Bitcoin network. I mean, they form a robust peer-to-peer mesh network. The servers do. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think calling it peer-to-peer might be overstating it a little bit, but the federation, you know, is, I kind of like and kind of don't like this analogy, but it's a lot like email, and People think of email, they think of spam and, you know, crusty, old, ugly email messages and all that kind of stuff. But it's stood the test of time, and it's because it's a protocol first. But you think about how you might have a Gmail address, or you may have a Yahoo Mail address, or a, Proton Mail address. And when you send an email through the Gmail interface to someone on Proton Mail, you don't care exactly how that works. But those servers behind the scene are communicating to share that message from one server to the next, and then to the final recipient.
Gotcha.
And that's the best analogy I can give for this.
Okay. So, so obviously I'm not running a server yet. And I logged on, I created an account, or rather it looks like you created an account for me in this particular instance. I logged in and, reset the password, and now I have an account. And that account, where does that data sit? Does that data sit on your server, or does it sit locally with me, or what's going on there?
So that data is on my server, which is in a data center here in Dallas.
Okay.
Yep.
And then when I log in, and let's say I go in and I post. And so for the listeners, this is, it looks very much like Twitter. So I could go in and post, and I don't know if there's a character limit, but I post some shit post like I usually do. That will,
you've got 5,000 characters.
Oh man, that's a lot of shit posting I can fit in. That's a lot of shit posting. So that goes, that obviously speaks directly to your server. It's stored there, and then your server speaks with other federated servers, and it propagates that across those other, let's just say, data centers or Raspberry Pis or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so now, where I get, let's bring this to, and first, I guess to give a little background on like Twitter or this versus Twitter. Twitter operates on a very centralized server. You know, you log into Twitter, and that is your data. You're pushing and pulling data from Twitter Corporation, their server network. Correct.
Right.
So this gives you the option to run your own server. And I assume connect to and disconnect from anybody that you would like, and have anybody connect to you that you would like. Now, what when you're keeping in mind the centralized version of Twitter versus the decentralized version that is whatever that name of it was, but let's just say Mastodon for as a general term for this for now. What does that look like when rubber hits the road? For instance, if you like, if you're someone like Aaron, who is going to get censored or banned almost immediately for God knows what happens in his case on Mastodon, or what could happen, I guess is the question.
Right. So let's just say that, Aaron signed up with my server. Mm-hmm. He would be banned instantly.
Yes.
I would see, you know, TLE Aaron, and he would be banned instantly. But let's say you set up a server and you decide that you are going to tolerate his shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
What can happen is kind of two different things. One, there's actually a distributed complaint system, which of course you can turn off and ignore. But you can file a complaint against a user on another server. Other users can block him, obviously. I think that's the most kind of free speech friendly mechanism here.
Yeah.
And then finally, other servers can choose to block your server entirely.
Because of a problematic user?
Yes. And so okay. I was going to mention kind of there's a huge difference in moderation, like philosophies across the network. And for a general term, I don't care for it too much, but the Fediverse is what people usually say. The Federation universe, I guess. So you have places like my server, you have places like Liberdon.com. You have places like BitcoinHackers.org that are all pretty free speech friendly. And then you have places like spinster.xyz, which is an explicitly feminist instance, and they ban you for all sorts of goofy things.
Just having a dong.
I think they allow you, but you have to shut up. I think that's okay. How that works. And then there's like anti-capitalist.party, which you can imagine what they are over there.
I'm sure that's a fun ride to go romping
through.
They've
basically cut themselves off completely from the network because they just can't handle it.
Can you see who all of these people are connected to and disconnected from?
Not easily. There are some like bots that attempt to graph the network and there are graphs that you can take a look at, but it's kind of implicit data. It's not easy to gather.
Gotcha.
But, you know, there's block lists going around of which servers all the good leftist servers ought to block. And so you can see who a lot of them are blocking.
Okay.
I forgot to mention them, but shitposter.club. I highly recommend that for Aaron.
So is that just what it sounds like? Just a server for shitposting?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool.
There's a lot of anime there too, but you know, I figure he can get over that or get into it. Yeah. I don't know.
So what happens functionally? Let's see. What am I trying to ask here? So I'm just trying to work through the mechanics of this in my mind. So first of all, let me back up. Can I mirror your server?
Mirror my server. So basically scrape all the data?
I guess, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not using the right word, but what if your server goes down and I'm only on your server?
Ah, I see. That's a bit of a problem. Okay. Especially when you have these smaller servers run by amateurs like mine. That can be a problem. Obviously, you can build into your own infrastructure some redundancy.
By that, do you mean run my own server?
No, I mean, if I had my stuff together, I could have redundancy, you know, instead of just the one server that I'm running. I could have...
I guess what I'm trying to get at is at a user level, how do I ensure that I can still reach people? Like I assume I can be a part of multiple servers. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And so I guess, do those servers speak to each other so as not to show my post twice? Or how does that work? You see what I mean?
Not quite.
So if I'm logged into your server and I'm logged into that shitpost server.
Sure.
If I post, do I choose which server to post to, or do I just simply post to my profile and then the servers pick it up?
So if you're logged into both and you're posting, you would be, you know, using the interface at one or the other of those.
Okay.
So it would be posted from your account at shitposter.club or your account at bag.social.
Oh, so I've got to choose which one to post it to.
Right.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So then, okay. So is there any way to automate like posting it to all accounts or something like that?
If you wanted to, I mean, the whole point is you don't need an account at the other locations for people there to see it.
Because your server will speak to the servers that it's connected to, ostensibly that one?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if someone over there is interested in my posts and follows me, every time I post, my server will go out and share my message with their server.
Okay. Huh.
And so in that way, it's replicated.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like, it's a weird combination. So in that way, it's almost like Lightning Network kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
Like it's fine. It's like routing through quote unquote channels to get whatever message to where it needs to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's a one hop channel, I guess two hops if you consider the client, but you know, from me to the server to shitposter.club And then I guess server. To the user. Yeah.
And to the user. Now, what if, I guess the next question is, can there be more than two hops?
No, it's all, well, there's a concept of a relay, but it's not really a first class idea. And I got to be honest, I don't understand it completely. I haven't looked into it. But there is a concept of a relay that will kind of, in a more automated fashion, share multiple users' posts between servers.
Okay. Interesting. So, what is the process? You just you simply make an account, and then you find a server or multiple servers to connect to, and then you can then begin just using the platform. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you create the account, that is on that server.
Okay.
So the account doesn't come first. It actually is directly connected to the server you connected to.
Huh. Okay.
So just like when you create a Gmail address, uh-huh. You know.
Yeah, you create it on that.
Right.
Gotcha. Cool. So can you give me an idea of like the activity level of this, like and the trend of that activity level? Like, are we, I was just poking around. I think I saw I think Control Pew was on there and had a bunch of followers. I mean, that's not really unexpected, I guess, but what's the activity level look like?
I mean, there's a ton of activity. That's for me, that's kind of the problem. The whole system has kind of rejected algorithms as a whole, but I need something to kind of sort the signal from the noise. Like Control Pew posts fairly infrequently. What's his name? NVK. The cold card guy. He posts pretty infrequently. And then in between that, I have like 50 posts from people literally just shit posting. So I'd love to have some kind of algorithm, but that's been kind of explicitly shunned. But because this is my server, if I ever got around to it, I could implement an algorithm to sort that kind of stuff. So I have a lot of control that way. The traffic really picked up in, was it January or was it later than that? When kind of the purges were going on from Facebook and Twitter.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm not on Facebook, but yeah, I imagine that. And then I imagine also the, what was that freaking thing that got hacked and all the people's IDs got leaked. It wasn't, oh my God, that like right wing.
Parler. Right.
Yeah. Parler.
Yeah.
Which was totally ridiculous.
All those people giving their IDs to this.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
This not honeypot.
No, right. Yeah, I imagine that there was some fallout from the more tech savvy people. Well, a lot of the tech savvy people probably never signed up in the first place, but some people probably decided to get tech savvy after that or try to and moseyed over to this.
Yeah.
You know, side of things.
There's definitely been a lot of migration. I think one big problem is people come in, they see nothing going on, and then they leave. And if they had all arrived at the same time, they would have stayed. But they all kind of trickled in over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been screaming about getting people on Liberdon.com for like 2 years now.
Yeah, I feel like over New Year's, you were actually screaming.
Well, you know, I had some liquid courage and you know, the dogs were loud too. Jake's dogs.
Yeah, that's true. At the same time, it's kind of like, it's nice to be able to have the quiet time to build out the network and all of that, prior to, because you know, at some point the big purge is coming on Twitter. I gotta believe.
Oh yeah.
I have to believe that they're going to be, you know, with the way that they're cracking down on, I don't know. I guess that's probably another interesting question is, do you think that they recognize the power that they have with Twitter where they're going to just try to keep people by making some small concessions, but still trying to control the narrative over there, or if they're just going to outright you know, tick people off. I mean, obviously they've definitely done that in small bits, but you know,
I think eventually they'll have to overplay their hand, right?
Yeah. You would think. But that'll be super interesting to see how that plays. Because, just in poking around briefly before we started recording here, it's a seamless transition from Twitter. I mean, it's the same thing. In terms of the user interface, at any rate, what's happening behind the scenes is obviously a lot different, but if you're not running a server, it's not all that different to you. And, and then you've always got the option to run the server. Now, Start9, the guys that I had on a few months ago, I think they are shipping that embassy with a Mastodon or some instance as an application on there. So I think you could actually run a server just out of the box with that thing. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yeah. When you had them on, I looked it up and they are running Mastodon on a Raspberry Pi, it looks like.
Yeah.
I don't know how much else you can do with the Pi at that point. Or maybe, are they shipping Pi 4s? They probably are, right?
Yep, Pi 4, yeah.
Okay. So maybe the Pi 4s have enough oomph to handle it. but I know it was a problem on older Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, I think the Pi 4s are actually pretty powerful, all things considered. Mine synced the Bitcoin in like 50 hours, which is
wow,
totally ridiculous. I mean, that's pretty unheard of. I'm syncing I just have an old computer laying around, so I'm syncing another node, and it probably won't sync for a month. It's an old Intel NUC, like the low power ones, but still, it's a full computer versus a Raspberry Pi, and it's, you know, it'll be lucky to do it in 20 times the duration that the Pi did.
That's funny you say that. We have a mutual IRL friend who's doing exactly that, and he's been giving me the updates daily this week, and it's like, oh, I'm at 56%. I think he's up to 80 now. It's sad.
Yeah. What is it on a NUC?
It is. It's I think it's one of those Steam boxes. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Nah, I'm not.
But it's essentially a NUC.
Yeah, dude. It's so flipping slow, man. I mean, I started the it's bad. It's really bad. I was absolutely shocked because I was reading before I flashed Umbral onto that Pi. I was reading people's times and I was like, there's no way I'm going to plug this thing in and it's going to sync in a few days. And sure enough, yeah, it was just a little bit past the full 48 hours, 2 days, but yeah, it synced right up.
That's awesome.
Pretty freaking impressive, man. And if it can run a Mastodon instance on top of that and Lightning, that would be really incredible. You're probably going to be running pretty hot, but I guess that might be the reason to just get another Pi and, you know, split up the duties a little bit.
Yeah, I think that with the savings you get from running Pleroma instead of Mastodon, you have a decent chance of getting it all running on the same machine.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like a 50% reduction in load. It's crazy.
So what else are they bringing to the table versus Mastodon? Was it just a kind of a code rewrite, or what's the need for this?
I think it was kind of a cultural thing primarily, actually. So Mastodon is kind of this hip. It's written in Ruby. It's got a lot of social justice trends in the development, and there's a lot of edgier folks that started the Pleroma software. So it just kind of, I think that was a big part of the divergence. I know that there's some history with GNU Social as well, and I couldn't recount that for you, but I think they just did not appreciate the way that Mastodon was working and the interface they chose and all that. So actually, this interface that you're looking at now is fairly different from Mastodon itself. So there were some major changes that they wanted to do for the users.
Well, that's kind of par for, it seems like par for the course for open source projects and things like that. Like, it just, there's always seemingly a big culture. I mean, if you look at something like Bitcoin versus Ethereum and things like that, it starts to, not that there weren't technical differences as well. Obviously there are, and those are probably the most important, but it does seem like those things split almost identically along party lines. Ethereum developers would stick out like a sore thumb amongst Bitcoiners.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, I mean, is you mentioned open source software. In open source, you know, there's literally no reason for people to duplicate work, and they do it all the time. So,
yeah,
it's just the not invented here syndrome is huge.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you know anything? Oh, here, before we move to the next thing.
No, I don't know anything.
Perfect. You're perfect for this podcast, man. We should get you on the main show. I assume that you can share like GIFs and pictures and things like that.
Yeah. So it's got media sharing capabilities. I think you can even do short videos. I haven't tried that from my instance, but I can view videos from other instances, no problem. So I mentioned way at the beginning that this is all based on a protocol called ActivityPub. Mm-hmm. And ActivityPub also is used by other software. Another one is called PixelFed, which is like the user interface is completely devoted to picture sharing. So it's very, I think it's meant to look like Flickr.
Okay.
So it's using the same protocol. You can actually interoperate between them, even though they're significantly different in their, you know, end goals. And then you have, beside that, there's also PeerTube, which again, same protocol, but exclusively for videos. And that one has a little trickier interoperability, but it still at the base level is sharing the same protocol. But for longer videos and that kind of stuff, that would be the platform you'd use. And that actually uses WebTorrents to distribute the actual video file.
Mm-hmm.
So you have extra decentralization.
Cool. So if I were to share a media or something like that, that's being stored on your server?
Yeah.
Okay. So is there protection for you? Is there like any algorithmic protection for you? Like from me, like spamming and just filling up your server?
Not particularly.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, just manual moderation, really.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No. I doubt it's like becomes a huge problem, particularly for like a little bit more niche servers, like the one, like the bag. I'm just kind of thinking about, you know, how that might scale or might become a problem or anything like that. But it's pretty remarkable. And I know that there's been a lot of people in this area, that have seen a lot of this coming, but, to me, like the pairing of the Raspberry Pi with all of these open source alternatives, has been really, really cool. And the concept of being able to run your own server, you know, for instance, you know, with Umbral or something like that, your own Bitcoin server, Lightning server, but then, to run your own social media servers and really just own your data and take that, control the censorship possibility and such away from these centralized organizations like your Twitters or, you know, your banks or things like that is really exciting. Not only that, but you run it on this low power piece of equipment that, really is very inexpensive. It's so cheap. I mean, yeah, you're looking at $150 maybe for a full Raspberry Pi 4 and a nice cooling case, maybe $200. And I mean, theoretically, there's really no reason that's not going to last you for a pretty long time. I don't think they have a too big of a history of burning out, particularly if you're not going in there and manually overclocking. it's just a kind of a remarkable revolution.
Yeah. I don't actually have a Pi 4. I don't know how hot they run, but I know the Pi 3's got a little toasty.
Yeah, mine runs pretty hot. I have an aluminum case that with a heat sink integrated, so it, you know, directs it all out to the case, so there's no fan. And it's pretty toasty. But you know, it's like one of those things. Okay, I'll just go out and, you know, the price of a Raspberry Pi 4 is only dropping, so I can always just go out and buy a new board and reflash it, and we're back in business.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could even port the SD card, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yank it from the dead one and put it in the new one.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. And I think that in the instance of Umbral, they store all the data files and things like that are stored on the external hard drive. So
yeah.
if you ever, yeah, you just reflash, you could replace the entire Pi, reflash, and then you have the SD. Yeah. And just plug it in and you're back in business within 5 minutes plus whatever the time is for you to actually go out and get the hardware.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I mean, I remember way back when, back in 2013, thinking about, you know, everyone running their own Bitcoin node and kind of the infeasibility about that. And stuff like this really makes it far more feasible. It just needs to be productized a little bit more. I know the Start9 guys are doing that.
Yep.
But I'll be honest, their price point, knowing kind of what they're giving you, their price point's a little tough for me, but I appreciate, mm-hmm. I really appreciate what they're doing, which is taking these parts, which are great and can be assembled by an enthusiast, and putting it into a product that a non-enthusiast can buy and use. And
it's high for you, but it's low for me. You know,
you calling me poor?
No, I'm calling you smart. there's virtually no price that's too high for me to avoid having to deal with any of the technicals.
Yeah, I keep forgetting you're a civil engineer. That's right.
Yeah, dude. Yep. It's I mean that price point is very low for what I would theoretically pay for everything that they give you without having to really go in and manually do it yourself, because I know you have those capabilities and I don't. And I don't really have any interest in having them.
Well, you know, I do have those capabilities, but on the other hand, my Lightning node has been sitting unconnected for months now because I got frustrated setting it up to connect through Tor, and that's the only way Rolla would, touch my node. So.
Do you just have like LND on a Linux laptop or something like that? Or do you actually have a, like an Umbral or something?
No, I've got my desktop has a whole bunch of hard drives in it and spare RAM and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just running Linux on there, and I've got a full Bitcoin node, and I've got C Lightning running on there.
Gotcha.
And Tor.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. What is Mastodon or this protocol's relationship with Tor?
None.
Okay.
So I know this is the first time I saw it, was extremely recently, but there is one server that has a Tor hidden service. So instead of connecting to their ClearNet site, you can connect to their hidden service and post mm-hmm. through that. So I guess in that way, that's pretty simple, in fact. But yeah, I mean, there's no like native support for Tor or anything like that.
Okay.
Server to server is all, not ClearNet, but TLS only. There's no privacy there.
Gotcha. Well, cool, man. Is there anything else that we need to cover, at least for an intro on this and the capabilities of this and the future of this and anything like that?
So I guess the major thing to say would be, you know, I don't think anyone has to give up Twitter or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, if you're addicted to the the dopamine over there and you like dunking on blue checks.
Sure.
And, you know, I do think there's something valuable in reminding people that everyone hates the blue checks and they're full of shit.
Yeah.
But you should have a backup somewhere else. I think that Mastodon and Pleroma and the Fediverse as a whole is a really good way to do that. So I am opening up my node to TLE people. They can go to get.in.thebag.social/TLE. Yes. And this is a mouthful, but I think it's easy to remember. Get in the bag. Sign up there. Don't use a password that's important, because I don't know if I mentioned at the beginning, I'm not a system administrator. I'm a programmer. So, you know, just don't use an important password. Something could happen. You're no more exposed than a Twitter user at that point, but still, you know, good OPSEC. But yeah, make an account, see if you like it. And more importantly, just have that as a backup, because the purge is eventually going to come for you and you're going to want to have an alternative. And I think kind of having a splinter, you know, we've got the in-group kind of threads already on Twitter, and this can be a place to host a lot of in-group threads.
Yep. Totally agree. Totally agree. So yeah, everybody go out. I made an account. I'm same as on Twitter, TLE_car. And I encourage everybody listening to get in the bag, dot social or whatever that was that Dan said. Dan, do you have any, do you have any, plugs you want to plug away?
I mean, that kind of was it. That's what I'm here to talk about. So,
yeah.
I don't know, if you hate yourself, you can follow me on, Twitter. I'm at ADEMAN555. That's a D-man. It's named after a new metal band I really liked back in middle school.
Perfect.
But yeah, I don't post any one consistent thing. So half the people who follow me are pissed off at my political tweets, and the other half are pissed off at my random nerd shit tweets. So
tight.
Yep.
Wouldn't want it any other way. Well, thanks a bunch for coming on, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Till next month, Esquite. Not so fast. Hold on just one second, guys. Dan sent me an addendum to attach onto the back end of the episode with a little bit more information, and I just wanted you guys to hear that. I think it's about a minute and a half, and then you're free to go. Class dismissed.
Hey, everybody. Dan here. I just wanted to add a quick little addendum, because I know I kind of got into a groove of just chatting with Carr, and I realized I rambled a little bit and didn't cover a lot of points that I wanted to. So the first one is, I know I missed a lot of details, and if anybody has any questions, I totally want to encourage you to hit me up on Twitter, ADEMAN555. Or join the bag and ask me there. But I want to make sure I answer everybody's questions. I obviously didn't cover everything I intended to, and that's on me. And the second thing is, I created the bag kind of as a rallying point, but I want to reinforce the fact that this is a decentralized network. So there's Libredon.com, there's Collapsitarian.io, there's all these tens of thousands of options for you to join. I created the bag specifically so I could direct everybody to one place. But it doesn't matter where you join. You can still chat with everybody on the bag. I just wanted to give everyone an easy option. Heck, sign up for multiples. Try them out. Mine has a slightly different interface. The bag has a slightly different interface from Libredon. I think you'll prefer what the bag has, but try them both out. See what you like. Thanks. Cheers.